The fire crackles, the tankard's full, and the scent of old pine and spellbound parchment fills the air. No, you're not in a tavern. You just lit a candle from Firelight Fables Candle Company. Each hand-poured candle is steeped in fantasy with rich, story-driven scents that turn any room into a world of wonder. Whether you're delving into a dungeon or relaxing at home, Firelight Fables is your portal to the extraordinary. Smell the story at firelightfables.com and use code STORYCRAFTERS to get 15% off your order.
Welcome to the Story Crafters, everybody. My name is Jeff. We have Jared and Nicole, who I have just unfortunately shamed myself for not watching the Brady Bunch. And unfortunately, Charlie is not here with us today. He is currently flying from or to Ohio, one or the other. So if you saw him, great. If not, great. But he'll be back on maybe in the episode later. Not quite sure. But yeah, let's kick this thing off, guys. It has been a little bit since we actually recorded a true episode where we don't have anybody being awesome like Jumping Jack's Tavern or all of those amazing questions that we got. But let's go ahead and, in old fashioned as we do, roll initiative.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, and I'm off to a good start.
I mean, it's still not great, but that's not the worst I've done with an 11.
Nice. Okay. 11. Nicole, what'd you get?
I got 14.
14. All right. We are going to go.
Good for me.
Nicole, Jared, me, because I got a whopping 6 as we do. Nicole?
Somebody had to.
What have you been up to lately?
What have I been up to lately? Well, it is June, folks, which means that my Kickstarter is pretty much done. By the time this comes out, I think it'll be done because I'm closing late pledges on Saturday, the 14th of June. So if you're listening to this or watching this on the first day it's out, you're too late. You can't get in on the Kickstarter. You're just going to have to pre-order stuff and get it to the Kickstarter, folks. But as fun as the Tales of Etheria book launch Kickstarter has been, I'm definitely excited to be wrapping it up and working hard on getting everybody's rewards out as soon as possible. No, like, for sure estimate yet, other than, you know, what I had posted before, which was, you know, July, August timeline. Mm-hmm. It might be sooner, but I don't want to make any promises yet.
Okay.
But it's coming along nicely. And I also did my first in-person vendor event that I've ever done as Game Master Mom last weekend. And that was really fun. Got my new banner. If you're watching this, you can see at least part of my new banner that I got. And I set up my booth like the newbie that I was and sold a few stickers and mostly just talked to folks and told them about the book. And
nice.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to doing more of those events, and it'll be really nice to do them when I actually have the books with me to like show people that they can turn the pages and look at. At this event, really all I was doing was taking pre-orders and giving out a bunch of free stuff for people to talk to me.
So fun. Do you have more events like set on your schedule that you know you'll be at for listeners to make sure they fly out to you and see you in person?
Not yet. I have several in the works, but none of them have a date completely nailed down yet. So
sure.
Well, I'll keep people posted, but I do think most of the in-person events that I'll be doing, at least in the next 3 months, are local to me, like Houston and Austin area in Texas. So not going too far yet, but I will.
There's plenty of time.
Honestly, I feel like with projects like this, I get so excited, but then I have to like slow myself down so I don't get overwhelmed, because there's this part of me that's like, oh, the books are about to come in the mail. That means I could take the books to cons. We should just go to all the cons. And it's like, okay, girl, slow down. You don't need to be at a con every weekend. That's too much.
Just bring your book. Come hang out. You guys come hang out with me and Charlie over in Virginia. Come to Tower and let's do a thing over at Tower. They love everybody, so it's fine. Awesome. Yeah, it's fine. And y'all can stay with me. It's great. It's fine. Don't have to pay for a ridiculously costed hotel at the beach.
That'd be fun. I'd love to do like a book signing type event or something like that, or run a game or something at Tower. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Oh, that's cool. Never mind. I'm not gonna. Nope. Nope. Jared, what you got, bud? What you been doing?
I saw the rabbit trail that you you were staring down, and that's very very good of you to steer away. I've actually had a fair amount going on, which is kind of fun, but I also think it's just because it's been a little bit since we've done this segment of our podcast. So first and foremost, I think I mentioned it in the episode that we recorded with Jumpin' Jacks, but I have joined a D&D campaign as a player, which I'm very excited about. So I've gotten to play once. I have joined the group Theater Geeks. They stream live on Twitch on Sunday afternoons from like 4 to 8 Eastern time. So I have joined the Journey to Ragnarok campaign. It is a pre-written module written by the Mana Project Studios. It is awesome. They have like a whole grimoire of like lore that's super in depth, that goes about all the runes and all these. It's incredible. That's cool. So I'm playing a paladin with a custom subclass that is made by Mana Project Studios. That's been super fun. So very excited to continue to do that. Theater Geeks is the name of the group. Because of that, I just have kind of taken it upon myself to make some winter terrain. It's not something I have in my own collection, and I thought, well, this is the perfect time to make some, you know, slightly Norse-leaning wintry terrain. So I'm working on some of that. I've made, I think the only pieces that are done, I've made like a tent and like a lean-to. I'm working on some like tree scatter and, you know, different wintry type things. So I'm excited about those. None are done or, you know, photo-worthy yet, but in the coming days they should be. I ran a session of the Abyssal Tide, my homebrew world. It was session 36. I will actually talk about that a little bit more in the lore segment, because it kind of directly pertains to what was happening there. Beyond that, though, I haven't done a ton. I've not done any mini painting. Jeff and I were talking about this before we started recording. Jeff has been painting like till the cows come home, and I've been doing none at all. I think I've painted like maybe two minis this year, which is pretty sad, but I have been working on my hobby desk area, though. I posted a couple days ago a picture of that, so it's coming along. I have some shelves above my head now that nobody can see, so that's been fun. That's been me, though. Appreciate it. What about you, Jeff? What you got going on?
Lots of painting with the mini challenges that, like, May was mini a day May. I think I ended up coming in at 38 minis, I think.
What the hell?
So I have two other friends that I paint heavily with and play a lot of Warhammer games with. One of them has already passed 100. And the other one is down in the 50s, I think, but he paints at a ridiculous level. And so it's like, I just paint fast, and I found a good method that works for me. But that still looks good, because I'm not going for a golden demon or anything like that. So as long as it looks good on the table. But I did push my crafting a little bit. I actually wasn't anticipating this, but they're right here because I'm working on them. I upped my game here and cut out a crap ton of tiny little bricks. And so I've been working on archways and stuff.
Is that like a foam?
That it's foam. Yeah, it's XPS foam. Jared's like, oh yeah, I've been doing that since I was like 4, you know. But I magnetized them so they also fit my magnet.
Awesome.
in my magnet system that I use in my dungeon tiles. Sorry, that one's heavier than that one. So I magnetized them, and then I made like little stairs too that are also magnetized.
That's super cool.
And I made like like a little like half ruin too. Like
that's awesome. But
the little individual bricks, while very therapeutic, good lord, is it time consuming.
Man. Yeah.
Dude, yep. I don't know how you do the builds you do, bro. Like, little scatter terrain things, I'm like, God, I want to gouge my eyes out. Like,
yeah.
But
see, this is how I feel when if I were to try to paint a mini a day, that it would be exactly how I feel, because I'm like going cross-eyed trying to paint minis. And that, I mean, listen, also probably going cross-eyed cutting all the bricks and stuff, much like you. Yeah. Much like you now know, but therapeutic is the right word. But yes, it is time intensive.
It is. I now have two full like parts of my bin that's in front of my crafting section of my hobby desk, just to the brim of different size bricks. And I actually picked up some legit like woodland scenics, flocks and stuff. So my friend got me into this game called Frostgrave, which is like a mix of like D&D and Warhammer, because it's a war game that uses a D20. So it's super swingy, where most war games play on a D6. So your chances for stuff are crazy. But it takes place in this frozen terrain. So I've been working on similarly frozen stuff, and so I'm going to give these like a frosted thing with like some snow effect and stuff. But it also helps that my D&D campaign is set in a snowy northern area, so I get to use that terrain for this campaign as well too. So
that's what I love about terrain, is when you can make it and use it in multiple settings. It's the best. I haven't played Frostgrave, but I played Rangers of Shadowdeep.
Yeah, that's made by the same guy.
Yeah, super fun. And Frostgrave is like a natural progression. I enjoyed it. I would like to play it more. You can actually play it solo.
You can.
Is kind of cool. You have, I mean, I'm going to botch this. You have like a certain amount of points that you basically can create. Mm-hmm. Your main character is a ranger that is venturing into the Shadowdeep. And but you have like a certain amount of points that you could build out your adventuring party, and you can play, I think it's up to four people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can actually play on your own and, you know, roll the dice and stuff, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of been what I've been doing.
Nice.
Yeah, it's been a good time. It's been a good time.
Yeah.
I just kind of blows my mind how you can paint that many minis that fast. Like, I cannot wrap my head around it.
I was showing Jared this. I didn't plan this. It's just really nice. I also moved where my camera is and stuff, so I'm actually at my painting table right now, so everything is just like right in front of me. The way that I've landed on how to paint quickly is I do a speed paint plus technique. So for those watching, I do a slap chop type prime. So I airbrush, or I'll spray with a rattle can if it's nice out, black, and then I'll go varying shades of gray up to the whites and stuff. But the thing that makes speed paint really effective is you have to put your light sources where you want them. If you just overdo the whole thing in white, that just looks like it's just a bright model. But like, for example, like on this one, I really accented the front of the helmets, the front of the quad, and like everything this way, like the sun was coming this way. So because then I'm going to object source light the headlights here, so it'll glow up on there too. So that will really help make your... Sorry, this is turning into a tutorial, Jared. We talked about me doing this.
I'm eating up every second of it because I'm like, those are
Everyone is getting an unsolicited painting advice tip from me today, which I hold none of this as original ideas. This is me just learning. A lot of it is from Don Cerritos on YouTube. Go follow him. He's amazing. But... you do that, and then you do your speed paint, and from there you go over and wait for it to fully dry. You have to wait for it to fully dry. but go over it with, I use Monument Hobbies paint. I like how matte it is. Army Painter is good. That's fine. I think it's too thick personally, but that's just me. And you go over just the highlighted portions, and because it's speed paint, it kind of shows you where the quote highlights are. So you don't have to think about where am I putting my highlight? It's already there. You just have to blaze mm-hmm. into that highlight. Otherwise it's a really stark transition. But yeah, that's how I get really fast paint jobs, because speed paint takes a couple minutes and then you just let it dry, and then you can do the real this part I find fun is all the small details.
Yeah.
But
I do a really similar process. It's just not quite as fine tuned as yours, but
that's what I told Jeff when we were talking before this. I said, I do the exact same thing, but worse.
I really like the 80-20 principle. So like the bulk majority of my work is put into the priming, because like I want my speed paint to really accent where my shadows are. So there are some spots that are just gray pretty much. So I want it to look dynamic from the speed painting aspect. I want my base paint, my base coats to look tabletop ready. And then from there you push them. So like that's why I'll spend 30, 45 minutes priming a model, just making sure that the model is ready for a good solid paint job. But
yeah. See, that's definitely part of that I do wrong, is that I'm just
I also airbrush a lot now too. I've started to get like really brave with my airbrush. Like you guys see that Jabberwocky that I posted. That's not a metallic paint. That's just an effect that I came up with gradient colors and stuff. Anyways, rubbing this is going to be one of those. This is going to be one of those. This is going to be one of those like fade out things that I did to Charlie. Anyways.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Man.
Well, so anyway, for more painting tutorials and pictures of all these things, go to Jeff's Instagram, where you can see all the things that he just demonstrated.
Actually, yes, thank you. Fantastic segment here, because I wanted to ask you guys as listeners and things like that, would you be, how worth it would it be for me to go live like once a week or whatever and just do like a paint hangout night between the channels and stuff like that, and we can all just get together and talk. And I'm talking to the audience here. I'm not talking to Nicole and Jared. Screw them. I'm talking about you guys listening. Yeah. Screw you guys. This is my party. Get out of here. Yeah. This is my house. Everyone leave. I was thinking about doing that, and I don't know. It'd be really fun to have a like Instagram live or something where I can actually talk to you guys and stuff like that. And we can have like a dual live between personal ones and the full story crafters. I don't know. Let me know. Let us know. Let everyone know. Let your mom know. Let everyone know. I don't know. If you'd want that to be a thing, and I'll make it happen, Captain. Anyways, I've been rambling on. My week has been weird. Jared, stop me. Let's go into the lore. Guys, we'll see you in a second. Alrighty. Are we ready, kids?
Aye, Jeffrey. All right. Hopping into the lore, it is going to be about lizard folk. When one thinks of lizard folk, it's easy to picture a cold, scaled brute lurking in the swamp. But that surface-level assumption barely scratches the hide. In Dungeons & Dragons, lizard folk are reptilian humanoids whose culture is rooted in one concept above all else: survival. They make their homes in the wilds, marshes, jungles, coastal bogs, where they construct surprisingly intricate villages from natural materials. Hollowed out gourds the size of small huts may serve as homes, watch posts, or incubation chambers. Bones are tools, shells are shingles, and vines are rope. Nothing is wasted. Even their homes reflect their worldview, practical, adaptive, and deeply in tune with their environment. Lizard folk don't decorate, they function. What might seem crude to outsiders is, in truth, a deliberate choice born from their cold-blooded pragmatism. This detachment extends beyond tools and shelter. Lizard folk don't mourn the dead, they don't romanticize the past. A fallen tribe member becomes a source of meat, hide, and bone, gifts that feed the living. Their emotional range is muted by human standards, but not absent. They feel curiosity, caution, pride, just rarely affection or grief. And when it comes to magic, lizard folk are wary. They may accept its power, but often only when it proves directly useful, healing a wound, repelling an enemy, or preserving food. Arcane theory and flashy spells hold little interest unless they produce tangible results. Divine magic may be viewed with equal parts reverence and suspicion, often interpreted through the lens of primal spirits or ancestral echoes rather than organized religion. Mechanically, they play as you'd expect, biting attacks, thick hides, and the ability to craft from what they kill. They're not elegant, but efficient. Their approach to adventuring is the same, direct, effective, and often unsettling. And yet, within that cold logic is a deep well of tradition and tribal memory. They don't celebrate, they don't mourn, they remember. Whether they appear in your world as the swamp's secret sentinels, the last guardians of a fallen draconic empire, or misunderstood outsiders, lizard folk remind us that not all people think like people. And I talk about lizard folk because, jumping back, this is where my homebrew world is currently at. One of my players is playing a blade-singing wizard lizard folk, which is a mouthful to say.
Yes, it is.
And so in session 36, which has been a lot leading up to it, we have finally arrived in his tribe. The Greenfen tribe is the name of it, which has been a lot of fun because he has a lot of bones to pick, literally and figuratively. And it's been a lot of fun exploring because it's such a different culture compared to what other, you know, humanoid species in D&D are. It's been a lot of fun to explore and expand upon. And I'm going to shut up in a second, but in the Tome of Beasts 1 by Kobold Press, I was just scrolling through monsters leading up to this battle, and I found the Spinosaurus dinosaur. And it says right there that Spinosaurus dinosaurs are often tamed and ridden by lizard folk. So I took that opportunity to throw a Spinosaurus at my players, and it was incredible. And I say this, we're only halfway through the battle is where we had to end our last session, so it's very possible that they all still die. But anyway, lizard folk.
Oh, that's amazing. That is amazing.
Man.
I had no idea about lizard folk culture until just this moment, but I'm enjoying learning about it. And that does sound really fun to like go to a tribe that is still living like that within game. And like there's so much creativity there with just like, this is not just somebody else's hometown, right? This is not like another little town. This is a whole different way of life and a whole different way of prioritizing things.
And I think for me, that's a first as a DM that I've been able to really do that, because as much as I want all of the locations in my world to be new and exciting and inventive, like there's only so many ways to, you know, reskin a fishing village, really, you know, when it is inhabited by humanoids and humans and elves, you know, whatever it is. So this has been a lot of fun because it's like, it's alien, you know, it's in the middle of a marshy jungle swamp. It's detached from the rest of civilization. So it's just been a lot of fun to really like dive all into like, things are just different here. I jumped at the opportunity to introduce dinosaurs because who doesn't love dinosaurs?
Who doesn't?
Heck yeah. If you have an excuse to bring in dinosaurs, why would you not?
Literally, like, my campaign is pirates, as anybody who's listened to this knows. But I watched, you know, Jurassic Park or World or whatever, and immediately was like, man, I wish I could justify bringing dinosaurs into this world just because they're so cool. And then I saw the Spinosaurus and I was like, oh, there it is.
There's my dinosaur.
I just keep thinking the Spinosaurus dinosaurus. I don't know why.
That's incredible. That's the new title.
Spinosaurus dinosaurs.
It was really fun. I need to take a picture and I'll share it eventually, but I was from Epic Miniatures. I 3D printed a Spinosaurus, which is really cool because I printed and painted a lot of lizard folk and they're all green and, you know, with yellow and orange spines like you would expect. And we've established the environment that they're in as lizard folk basically just disappear as soon as they go into the underbrush. And then we have this monstrous Spinosaurus that's like bright blue and red. So the like juxtaposition of that stomping through the forest was also so fun to describe that it was a lot of fun.
Out of curiosity, I'm curious. How long are your sessions?
We go anywhere from like 3 to 4 hours. Wow. We typically play on a Friday night and we typically have a meal together first at like 6-ish. We probably start playing by 7 and we try to wrap by like 11. So it's a reasonably long session. We typically get a fair amount done.
Yeah.
But we also have been a little bit in a rut that we're probably averaging like once a month lately, which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
the trade off of knowing we typically get a longer session time is nice. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, man, that's cool. The only thing that I knew about lizard folk is, I sound so weird. The folk.
Folk is not a word that you can think about when you're saying it because there's no reason it should be said or spelled the way that it is. So you just say it confidently and move on. You know.
Yeah, that was weird. Anyways, I didn't know much about them outside of like using them as an NPC as like a villain for a sea thing. The only part of like lizard lore of anything that I knew was from like the Elder Scrolls. And I just think like Skooma. But yeah, that's so cool. I love that they don't like think about death like everybody else. Like they're just like, yep, it's part of life. Keep it going. Yeah. Like we remember them. We have the great memories, and it's like that's so cool. Like I don't know. It's so much.
It's been fun. Maybe I said this already. My brother plays the lizard folk in this campaign, and it's been fun to see how he's portrayed him too, because his backstory is very much he's from this tribe that is remote, and he was basically booted out and then was basically forced to join civilization for the first time. So it's been fun to see how he's played that, and now kind of the full circle coming back to it with all the new literally leveled up and all the new skills and information that this lizard folk now has. We have the joke. I mean, it's also fun as a DM, Andy's my brother, to say like in your lizard brain, this is what you think,
in your lizard
brain. But it's really fun because we kind of have this on running joke of like, he's probably the most well-traveled lizard folk in the entirety of the Oceanic Vale, which is the world that we play in. And it's like, that's kind of fun, it's been a lot of fun. The wiki, Forgotten Realms wiki is a great place you can read all about them. They're really fun. Try playing one, try introducing one into your campaigns. They're a lot of fun.
That would be fun, because I don't know, how would I introduce that? I don't know. Anyways,
you will find a way.
Nicole, how would you have any lizard folk in your game?
I don't, but now I kind of want some.
How would you introduce a lizard folk to your game with the kids?
I don't know. I feel like I'd have to simplify it some, because all of that like social cultural stuff, I think, would probably be a little too abstract for the kids I play with. I don't know. I think they'd either get bored by it or they'd just be like, what? It would right over their heads. But I think at least in a simplified form, I think it could be fun. And, the kids that I play with like flip out when there's an animal or a humanoid animal looking character. Like they don't care what it is. They're just like, oh yeah, I want to talk to the tiger person. I want to talk to the whatever. Like, oh, there's a squirrel in that tree. I want to go befriend the squirrel. And I'm like, oh my God. Okay. Forget it.
That also describes me, unfortunately, but.
I'm going to go talk to that squirrel.
Same. I mean, if y'all remember that one shot that we did forever ago that may never actually exist in public. Like the first thing I wanted to do was like, can I talk to some woodland creatures, please? That's really what I would like to do here. Yeah, I don't care about anything else, but I want to talk to the critters.
Yep.
It is interesting though, because, well, and this will transition well into our main topic that we'll get to, but it is interesting because to introduce and play lizard folk and stay true to the lore, they are like brutal. Like, they're not interested in anything except for food. You know, they might have some goals beyond that, but it's like everything is food, basically, you know. So it is kind of fun.
Your brother plays a magic wielder, right? And they're kind of like not into magic so much usually. So that's an interesting dynamic.
And the way, so this, I'll try to keep it short. The way we've landed on that is the Greenfen tribe came across some magical documents, whether it be scrolls or a grimoire, basically by, you know, killing some travelers. And so in their little group, there was a shaman, which is traditional in a lizardfolk tribe. There's typically one shaman that, you know, interacts with the weave to some extent. But so the story that we've played is the shaman, who is his mentor, did not know blade singing, really. He just understood the weave to some extent. But they have this grimoire that then the character Kifarin is his name, found. And that's kind of like the section of the weave that he really latched onto was this blade singing. And he's kind of flavored it to make a little bit more sense within that context. But so then there was a few other magic users within that tribe too that actually, what, he's a wizard, there's a druid, and there's, I think, another wizard from a different school, quote unquote. But that is kind of how they've attained and learned their magic, is basically through ransacking backpacks of other adventurers' groups and basically learning. And so it's kind of a broken, you know, we've kind of said that if you were to ever go to a wizarding school, they would probably be appalled at his use of, you know, the weave. But I think that's fun. And I think it's fun to take something like that and on its surface saying, like, I'm playing a lizard folk who uses magic, which maybe doesn't really make sense, but then finding a way to be able to plug that in and kind of make it make sense within the context, I think is one of the most beautiful things to do in D&D, especially in homebrew and world building. That just makes it so much fun, you know?
Yeah.
That is really fun.
That's exciting. Lizard folk are cool. Go play a lizard. Go get a lizard.
They are. I wasn't they even thinking lizard. About it until...
It is, as a DM, it's also brutal because he's a wizard, but he can get his AC up to like 25 or 26 with the shield spell. And being a lizard folk, they innately have a higher AC. So it's like you would never know that he's a wizard, but... Anyway, yeah, play lizard folk. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun builds that you could do within that, which I love too. I love that it's a playable race and, you know, as fun as NPCs.
Nice. I would play a lizard.
They still exist in the 2024 lizard folk?
Yeah, sure. I don't know if they were updated and brought over to that. I kind of think that they're not, but I wonder if they will be down the line at some point, but...
I would like to play.
That's a great question, actually.
They really like, I don't know. They really got a lot of the races gone. I don't know if they're coming back or something, but just looking through like the manuals they've put out so far, I was looking the other day and I was like, where'd all the races go? Why is there only like six to choose from now? There used to be like 20. What happened?
Yeah.
It's weird.
I don't know.
I don't understand that change, but.
Which I think from like a beginner standpoint is probably wise, because then it's very much the classes that are available in the 2024 are very much like a, you know, I've watched Lord of the Rings. I know what an elf should be like. I know what a dwarf should be like, you know? So I do think it's smart in that vein for new people to kind of simplify it, but.
Yeah. It makes it a little bit more accessible to the masses, but.
Yeah. Anyway, that was
our fun. Fun topic. That's good.
I like it. That's a good lore topic.
That is. I like that. We should explore more races of the Sword Coast and places beyond. But
down in the rotation.
That'll be one
of our lore seasons. Races of the Sword Coast.
Ooh. Not bad. Not bad. We'll talk to Charlie. man, but yeah, hopefully y'all enjoyed that. That was really good. Jared, you crushed that as always.
Appreciate
as you guys do with all your lore. But yeah, for everyone else listening in, we are going to jump into our main topic here tonight, which is
Surprise!
Surprise, surprise, surprise. Do
nobody features. Knows what it's going to be.
Because we had a guest episode last time, and so we had to roll randomly today. So it is, do evil creatures have a moral compass? Can they do good things? Nicole, kick us off. What are your thoughts? Tell us.
I love this question. I feel like this is, I don't know. I feel like I think about this all the time, especially running kids games. Like one of my big things that I like to incorporate is like that there's always an option to not fight and just be a murder hobo if you don't want to. Most kids want to.
God forbid.
Anecdotal experience.
I mean,
it's nice to have an option to not, you know, it's nice to have an option to be friends or talk it out or something like that instead. So there's always an option built in my games, at least in my mind, for how to win over or persuade or befriend any evil or like monster character. That being said, when that actually happens, it's usually super fun. I love the like character development of an evil character into like someone who kind of like changes their mind and turns to either neutral-ish, where like, okay, kind of like I'll not fight you, I'll not eat you or whatever, but you give me something in return that I want, you know, it's sort of like more of a, not necessarily if they're on the good side now, but that they're at least willing to kind of like bargain and be more neutral as long as they still get something out of it.
Yeah.
I've had a few bad guys that ended up turning into actually like allies that are recurring NPCs in my campaign, and they're some of my favorite recurring NPCs because I just feel like we've gotten to know them in like this really different layer of like what their intentions were and then kind of like how it's changed through the campaign. So I love it. I love a monster turns to less monster narrative. I'm here for it.
I mean, I think that's so much fun to explore too, because then it keeps it unexpected, you know. I think, you know, without any spoilers, like Baldur's Gate 3 does this incredibly well, where it's like you can side with, you know, goblins or mind flayers or, you know, whatever. I think they play that dynamic really well of they take these creatures, even like Gith, you know, take these creatures that we kind of know as innately bad, or at least like not really good by, you know, typical human standards, and then kind of diversify that and see what does that look like. Because like you said, Nicole, I think it's fun where it's like they might not be innately good, but they might not just be bad, they might be just kind of in it for themselves. And I think that's probably the reality of most sentient creatures, or at least like semi-intelligent creatures within that space of like, sure, I think it's great sometimes, like the red dragon might just be a jerk and they might just be bad, and maybe there's no ulterior motive there other than some men just want to watch the world burn, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that's so fun, and I think it opens up so much creativity, because while I think it's great to have those things to always reference back to when you're playing D&D, you know, like in the Mines of Phandelver, I think it's great for, you know, a first combat to see goblins bad. I know they're bad. Let's get them, you know. But I think that it's fun to be able to explore beyond that and have the nuance and the layers to everything. My players are pirates, so we kind of went in with like, hey, you are all kind of intended to be morally gray. And I, as the DM, am still probably going to be telling the story or presenting the story in a way that you guys will be the heroes. But you know, there's a lot of nuance and levels to that as far as they've done a lot of things that are nowhere close to good. Maybe not murder hobo, but, you know, pirates, they're pirates.
Yeah.
They're doing what's right in their eyes, but it might be at the cost of who knows what. And I think that's a lot of fun. I think it's a lot of fun to explore. It's fun to tweak with those things. And, you know, owlbears don't have to be good. Owlbears don't have to be bad. They just are. And depending on how you choose to interact, that's going to determine whether they're your enemy or your ally or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I love to throw out, like I feel like goblins are a good example, right? Like, just like, there are goblins here in this scene. They're not doing anything to you. They're just minding their own business. Yeah. What do you do? Right? And like, a kind of give that opportunity to be like, okay, well, some characters, at least my kind of players that I play with, will be like, oh, goblin, bad. Shoot it, you know? But it's like, okay, maybe they're not bad, though. Maybe like, if you just went up and talked to them, you'd find out that they're actually scientists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think the lizard folk, the tribe where I'm at right now in my homebrew world, is a great example of that, because they've not innately really done anything wrong. They wronged one of my player's characters, so the group as a whole has kind of decided like, hey, enemy. But in reality, they're just kind of doing what lizard folk do.
Yeah,
you know, which I think is also kind of fun, and I wouldn't necessarily throw that at my player's feet and be like, haha, you guys just annihilated a village, you know. But it's kind of do it like you decided to seek them out. They weren't going to come to you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like the idea of, I love a good bad guy like Thanos. And so I think of like, there is a moral compass there, kind of, in a way. It's like a skewed moral compass. Like, it's so, like, I love that, like, complicated, like, you can kind of agree with the bad guy a little bit. Like,
yeah, it's like the idea was good at some point.
It's just application. Just
the execution is pretty, like,
but
morally gray.
Yeah,
at least gray.
But I do like the idea of, Jared, you like nailed it with the owlbear thing, because I was going to bring up an owlbear. But then I just looked at the updated rules. They're no longer, I don't think they were listed as evil, right? Weren't they originally?
I feel like they were originally, because I think they were kind of intended to be, look at this intimidating monster that's going to rip you apart.
They're listed now as unaligned. I don't remember what they were.
I think is correct.
Yeah, because I think of like, okay, it's super cool because in my mind, an owlbear by nature is pretty hostile for the most part. But then I'm thinking like, well, how cool would it be to try to like tame one? Like,
right?
And that would be cool. And then it kind of has like another purpose where it's not just, and then you can grow to like, you know, do some animal handling checks or something like that, and like all those types of things to try to like get it to like, you know, I forget what it's called when animals like start liking a human. I forget what that's called, like bonding with it. Compassion, you know, bonding, that sort of stuff, you know. And I think that's a really cool concept that you can take in, like, from an animal part that for the players that make it seem pretty cool. But yeah, a good old big bad with a, just one of those, you're like, I can kind of see it. I kind of don't hate you. But at the same time, fireball.
Right. So. I mean, I think if you look at media, all of the people who are toted to be the best villains always have that. They should always, in their mind, be, I mean, with a few exceptions, again, like Joker, maybe in The Dark Knight, or, you know, I'm sure there's countless examples, but I think they should always be right in their own mind, you know, where it's like, again, maybe from a moral perspective, that is just bad, but, you know, Thanos thought he was right. And I think that's great. And I think you can apply that to anything. I think it's fun to do the inverse too of, you know, take one of the metallic dragons that is innately not bad.
Yeah.
Maybe you have them jaded by the way others have treated them over the years, and maybe now they are evil, or, you know, more of an evil alignment. Because again, especially for experienced players, I think it's great to be able to switch those things around just to keep people on their toes, so that it's not always the face value. You know, I've had a lot of players be like, I know what that is, but my character might not know what that is. And I think it's fun to still flip that on its head of like, you think you know what it is.
I like that. Definitely, like, and you know, maybe this is just me because of the audience that I play with, but like dragons, right? Typically not like, you don't want to just walk up to them and be like, hey, let's be friends in like traditional D&D. But most of my target audience in my games loves How to Train Your Dragon. It's like their favorite thing. So it's one of the things that comes up all the time is like, I introduce like a huge dragon and they're like, oh, can I train it? Can it be my friend? Can I ride it? And I'm like, no.
No, you can't. No,
you can certainly try.
You can certainly try. You go ahead and try to do that. But it's funny, like, to think about like how perceptions are different like that, right? Based on like what you've been exposed to.
Yeah. No, I love that. That was such a good topic too. Like, does anyone have any other thoughts? Oh, I had one last one. I love the goblin metaphor of like, there are, I mean, some goblins, some of them are just stanky, you know? And they're just like, hey, I'm just being a goblin, you know? But I think it's in Lost Mines of Phandelver. I think you can, there's a goblin in there named Clarg, I think, that is pretty funny to get to roleplay. Jared shaking his head like, I know what you're talking about.
I'm pretty sure that's great. I can't remember if that's Clarg is one of the names, but I can't remember
I don't know if that's
I know exactly what
you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah,
it's like, you don't have to kill him and he can become like a boon to the party, which is pretty funny. And as a GM, you get to roleplay at least the ways that I've seen it and done it, the players like always get close to knocking him out. So he's always kind of like, whoa.
Risk of repeating myself, I think that's the great part of it. Combat should always be optional. Obviously, combat is fun, especially my group. Like, I try to at least present combat every single session. And typically when it's presented, it's, you know, the opportunity is taken to attack, you know. But it should always be optional, and there should always be that, you know, when I plan NPCs, this is not groundbreaking. I'm sure thousands and thousands of people do this. I basically just write like, what is this person's viewpoint on the world? And by using that, then I can kind of determine like, if we take path A, B, C, or D, this is how this person likely would then react to that situation, you know?
That's awesome.
I really want to talk about the one shot that I did with Tabletop Misfits. Because I feel like it kind of plays into this a little bit too, but I don't want to give any spoilers in case anyone hasn't watched it and still wants to. It was so cute and so fun, but I will say that this sort of like, are the bad guys really what they appear to be kind of idea does come up in the one shot too, in a really really cute way.
That's so fun.
I don't want to say it because it would like really spoil a lot of it. I may have already said too much, but it is available. I think the recording's on Twitch and on YouTube under Tabletop Misfits channel. So if anybody wants to watch it, go watch it. And if this comes up again in conversation, I'm going to give the spoilers next time.
There you go. You've been
this
warned.
Is your chance. Spoilers. If you don't want the spoilers, go watch
spoilers for the spoiler.
Yes.
Oh man, that's good.
It was so fun.
Man,
that's so exciting. What a beautiful game we all get to play and just make game. Stuff up and sit here and talk about, you know. So much fun.
Fun. Man, it is so much fun. I got a picture of, I ran a one shot for, that was the other thing I did. I ran a one shot, which I haven't done in a minute. Ran a one shot.
And I got this adorable picture of Eli sitting on my lap in front of the I've stopped using a GM screen and I just use candles and like this, my iPad and like a skull that's right in the front. It's pretty dope. And so there's this picture of him and everybody around the table and we're just all sitting there and it's just like, oh, we get to all play this game. And Eli's sitting there. I was describing this like fog dragon. I'm going to cut this out. I was describing this like fog dragon thing and Eli comes up to me and he's like, Daddy, was that real? And I was like, no, dude. He goes, oh, good. That was scary. Sorry. I don't know. That just made me think of that because it was like, I was playing the real game, but Eli, it was like, this was the first like real time that Eli had seen me play D&D.
Sure.
Like, and so he was just like, he was sitting at the other end of the table and he was just like,
mm-hmm.
It was really cool. Anyways, that just made me think this cool game that we played. Maybe I won't cut that out. I don't know. It's full circle to that.
It's so what a cool
game that we get to play where you can play with kids, you can play with adults. I've played with my mom. Like, you know, it's just so cool. So everyone, don't be afraid of tabletop RPGs or RPGs in general or rolling dice and getting weird and voice acting and just enjoying life for a few hours.
Yeah, just have fun. Just have fun.
All right.
Speaking of fun.
Yes.
Yep. Speaking of fun, I'm going to roll a D100 and then we will determine our topic.
Let's do it.
I rolled a 35.
So you rolled a 35.
Charlie, will let us know what number 35 is, Charlie, on our master sheet.
Spoiler alert. Just got off the phone with Charlie. Guess what, guys? We are going to be talking about our favorite puzzles to use against our players. Can't wait. Back to you guys in whatever real time, fake time, recording time, edited time. All right, I'm shutting up now. Back to the show.
Unless anybody else has anything to say, thank you very much for listening. Your support is truly appreciated from all of us, the bottom of our hearts. We love you. Thank you very much. We are the Story Crafters, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye.